and welcome to the SIGGRAPH Spotlight Podcast. We're so thrilled to bring you today's episode, where two of our 2018 chairs talk tech with two very special guests. To learn more about the topics, conference programs discussed, or to submit work to SIGGRAPH 2018, visit the links in the show notes. Enjoy the show.
My name is Jerry Dirksen. I'm a professor at Winthrop University and a researcher here at the University of Illinois. And Nick is with me. I'll let him introduce himself.
Hi, my name is Nick Oberle, and I live in Rapid City, South Dakota. I work as a freelance designer, and I am the 2018 studio chair for SIGGRAPH.
Today's guests, we've got Stephen Lavelle, a professor in the Department of Computer Science at the University of Illinois, an author of Planning Algorithms and Virtual Reality. We also have Ben Maloof here, director of marketing at Aleph Objects. Did I pronounce that right, Ben?
You did.
Okay, great.
So many technologies have debuted at SIGGRAPH, or the research that led to their eventual creation was published at SIGGRAPH. As technology continues to rapidly evolve, what do you guys see as SIGGRAPH's importance in this progression? Ben?
Well, SIGGRAPH has always been, you know, definitely the sort of the annual nexus of convergence of art and technology. As a 3D printer manufacturing company, we were last year was actually the first time our company has attended SIGGRAPH, and we were just blown away by how literate the crowd was in terms of, like, they understood the technology and they were just trying to figure out ways to apply it to their own work. So I think because of the reputation SIGGRAPH already has across multiple industries, it's just by default staying that, like, sort of, like I said before, that sort of nexus where all of these things come together and get announced each year.
Awesome, man. And what about you, Steve?
Well, I think SIGGRAPH is a very interesting place because of this community that it's built over many decades that combines computer graphics with art and design very nicely. And I think as newer technologies continue to emerge and grow, taking, for example, virtual reality, which I'm very close to, there's an exciting opportunity to bring more people into the fold, sort of unholy alliances, so to speak, of types of people that wouldn't normally be seen in SIGGRAPH, I think, are starting to emerge and appear more so, and that will continue to grow. As examples, I believe optical engineering and optical science and display technologies, these kinds of things will be merging more and more tightly with computer graphics and human perception and physiology. These sorts of things start to come more and more into play as we transition from, say, graphics on a screen into virtual and augmented reality, and also just the sensing technologies and machine learning technologies and control systems and so forth and so on that are required to make a lot of these technologies work. All of this comes together. So I think SIGGRAPH's a great place for bringing people together, whether they're industry or academia, and having this kind of intermingling that'll be required to move this technology such as virtual reality and others forward.
Awesome.
Actually, picking up on that a little bit, that's looking forward to some of the technologies that are sort of on the horizon. One of the themes at SIGGRAPH this year is generations. So if I can get you to think back a little bit into history of technology, can you tell us a little bit about what you think are the most important advances, and particularly some of those things that transformed your professional work, Steve?
So by history of technology, you mean all of it, or maybe just during my lifetime? if I think about the narrow context even of just virtual reality, in my book I was thinking about the history of VR and technology, and I started to go back 40,000 years to cave paintings, and then also thought about imagery that one builds in the human mind from reading novels. You know, it's very hard to pull things together and find the critical points along history where there's been some fundamental change. In spite of that, I thought about your question some, and I sort of made three key points: the printing press, the internet getting to the level of web browsers, and then hence information on the internet in everyone's homes, and then the third level being smartphones and social media together. And in each one of these cases, there's a rapid change in society that seems to occur because people have such incredible new access to information or the ability to communicate. And I think, again, printing press to internet / web browsers, and then social media / smartphones. And I think each one of those has had quite a bit of transformation on society. The middle one, just simply being able to surf the internet, motivated me as a young professor to start writing textbooks and putting them online for free, which was a great way, I felt, to impact the world. People all over the place, India, China, Iran, U.S., European Union, all over the place could obtain the materials that I've been working on for free. And I had a lot of impact that way, and people seemed very grateful for that. And that was, very important for my own career development and the research that I was doing.
How about you, Ben?
Yeah, and I'm going to sort of answer this a little more narrowly, from the stance of like the industry that I'm active in now, which is additive manufacturing, 3D printing. What's really interesting in 3D printing is just how a convergence of other technologies really allowed 3D printing to become more mainstream. The technology has been around since the late 80s, but because of the internet didn't exist, or at least not as we know it. Material science was further behind. And then most importantly, just the computing power to actually be able to work with 3D models, like on a desktop computer, just wasn't there. So it's fascinating to me how what it took was all of these things sort of reaching a certain point where they enabled 3D printing as another technology to be more widely adopted. And that just, along with that, the internet's ability to let people collaborate really allowed collaboration in things like mechanical engineering that never could have happened before, because people could design a part in, let's say, in the UK, and then somebody could print that part in the US, test it, and make changes to it, send the digital file back to the person in the UK, and so on and so forth. And that was happening globally, and it just drove rapid advancement in the industry. So it's really just like the convergence of all these technologies is almost more interesting than any one technology by itself.
Perfect. That's so interesting. Yeah, we just got done speaking about the past. So now let's talk about the trends that are coming. The SIGGRAPH Emerging Technology Studio and Virtual Augmented and Mixed Reality programs strive to reflect trends at the forefront of computer interaction. What are some of the emerging trends in technology that you've started to recognize? Steve, if you could speak to VR.
Yes, certainly. I mean, the thing we've seen throughout the history of VR technology is a lot of, let's say, false starts or elevated expectations, many ups and downs. And so one of the recurring things that we see in that area is people come in with some expertise. They expect VR systems to behave in a similar way. And then it often surprises us when it doesn't quite work like we expected, right? So I think that the three kinds of things that we struggle with in order to make, let's say, pervasive, VR for everyone, very affordable, very comfortable, and so forth, I like to call it the three E's. There's an engineering problem, which can mix hardware, software, its graphics, its displays, its optical engineering. Very challenging for major engineering companies, whether they're more software-focused or hardware-focused. But in addition to the engineering, there's the very strong ergonomics problem. That's the second E, which involves really understanding human perception. And, of course, there's comfort issues, sickness, and things of that nature. But even just making a device that's light enough and wearable for very long periods of time, especially as you go more towards, let's say, augmented reality types of applications, this becomes very important. And human perception, as part of ergonomics, as I said, that feeds very closely into engineering. So it becomes very difficult to develop systems that consider these quite closely together. And then the third E is the ecosystem, which in order to make all of this work, we have to figure out what this technology is good for. And I think one thing that we often struggle with is trying to narrow down and figure out, let's find one good use case and then build an entire system that satisfies all three E's really well. And while we're in a phase where VR can do so many cool things, we tend to end up with larger, heavier kinds of devices, and we end up being a little lower on the ergonomic side. And there still ends up being a lot of hard engineering challenges to solve. So I think all of this is very promising and it's progressing along very nicely, but we still have these three E's to address in some way. And I think a lot of the progress will be made only by bringing people together who normally wouldn't come together. Just as SIGGRAPH famously brings together computer scientists and artists, which is challenging for other conferences to bring together people that far away, you'll see even more groups of people having to come together for this.
Interesting. And Ben, any emerging trends you've been noticing in 3D printing?
Definitely. The biggest, probably the biggest area in 3D printing advancement that we've been seeing over the last couple of years is in materials. Early on in desktop 3D printing, specifically printers that work with filament, your options for materials were pretty limited. And a lot of the early machines only worked with ABS, which is like Lego plastic. And ABS warps pretty severely in an open environment and, it can be difficult to work with for that reason. And then PLA, which is a bio-based plastic, it's more rigid, but it's also more brittle. So it's easier to print, but it's not as functional. Since then, though, we've seen a lot of companies, Eastman Chemical Company, for example, taking an interest in this space and saying, well, we have a portfolio of materials that we're not even using, and many of them could be appropriate for use in desktop 3D printers. So we've got like major corporations, you know, that understand chemistry now actually getting involved in developing materials for printers. Along with that, there's a ton of work just going into alternative materials, you know, things that are materials with like epoxies where you're mixing two materials as you print, or UV cured materials or things like that. So there's materials are really expanding the range of what it's possible to make on your desktop. Along with that, though, like the biggest piece missing in terms of getting broader adoption, I think, and bringing more people in and saying, yes, you can make that at home, you know, yourself, is on the 3D modeling side. So it's really exciting to see. We work a lot with the Blender Institute. They're actually working on making their software easier to use so that it can be more widely adopted in schools, you know, and so the teachers understand it as well as the kids. So yeah, getting a, you know, software advances that make 3D modeling easier are going to do a lot for additive manufacturing. And VR and AR will probably play a big part in that. I mean, if you can actually hold the thing that you're modeling in your hand virtually, that's a lot easier for most people to sort of connect the dots between, you know, what their hands are doing and what they're seeing on screen.
Excellent.
Yeah, actually, I'm interested in sort of 3D printing for maybe, you know, looking at printing VR glasses, or I've always had an mm-hmm. idea about a VR helmet that might work out. Are these directions that, or any of these directions that you've mentioned, Ben, is it something that you're personally working towards, or your company?
Well, what we're more focused on, I guess, more than is really making our printers capable of doing whatever the user wants them to do. So we make totally open source hardware 3D printers. And they run on free software. So we don't always get to find out all the cool things that our printers are being used for, because a lot of times, you know, they're buying the open source machine so they can do the super cool secret proprietary project. But companies like Eastman, you know, they buy our printers and they test their materials on them. And then a lot of times, you know, we'll have customers give us specific requests, like it'd be great if I could print, you know, this material, and we'll sort of funnel that information to all the different material suppliers we work with. So we try and act as an intermediary, I think, a little bit more when it comes to material advancements, just making our hardware and our software capable for researchers and for people that are doing, you know, experimentation with that stuff. One example is like we're working with a university on development of a bioprinting tool head. So they basically modified their machines to be able to print with biocompatible gels. And so that's something that they can do because we provide all of the mechanical files for our printers so that they can look and see how they work and modify the hardware and firmware accordingly.
Okay. And how about you, Steve? Are you working towards the three E's yourself, or what's up next for you?
Well, I've spent a lot of time, you know, worked recently at Huawei on hardware and software issues as the chief scientist of AR, VR, and MR there. I was an early founder of Oculus, worked a lot on the you know, device level kinds of issues and such. But I think you know, at the current time and looking into the future, I want to focus more on some of the fundamental or scientific issues that are a little more university oriented. In that case, I'm really interested in the human perception part and interfaces part, and how those come together in this technology to really understand, you know, what do you need for the particular type of experience that you want to build. You know, start with a particular experience and figure out what's minimally needed, what's needed for comfort, and what's very efficient. Sort of like, you know, imagine trying to design something that's like the mouse. The mouse was very important for PC computing, and, you know, it took a long time to evolve that, and then just to recognize the business opportunities for the home PC and such, was famously done by Apple, for example. And I think the same kind of thing still remains for the future in VR. And I think it'd be very exciting to try to figure out what that is. And that'll involve a mixture of understanding human perception and physiology, together with the engineering side. And so that's what I'm looking forward to working on in a university setting.
Excellent. So finally, both of you guys have worked on the national stage and on big, big projects. If you were going to give an aspiring researcher or scientist advice, hoping to have work featured on a stage like SIGGRAPH, what advice would that be? Steve?
Well, one advice that I give to many students that I've taught over the years, and sometimes more junior coworkers, is to try to push yourself out of your comfort zone. And I think in this field, especially again for VR, which I'm closer to, it's quite critical and important to do that. So if someone, for example, is maybe very strong in graphics, I may push them to, just depending on what they're working on, but I may push them to study more on the human perception side, maybe a design of experiments that involve humans, which is a very difficult and challenging part. Or maybe they should push further into optical engineering to really understand that side of things, to see how that side can contribute to next generation displays and how that ultimately impacts graphics and so on. So I think really being able to see, you know, to study other subjects that one might be uncomfortable, and as a researcher, to collaborate with people who are well outside of your comfort zone. Again, to make this the same comparison to earlier times in SIGGRAPH, or as it has been all along, perhaps, you see computer scientists coming together with art and design people. And I think the same kind of thing, for people to be really successful, they should be developing collaborations with people who have quite a different background.
And Ben, what about people that are trying to make inroads into the 3D printing and makerspace area?
Mm-hmm. My advice would just be to keep in mind where all of the, you know, all the hype around 3D printing came from. And it originated in collaborative work, not in people going it alone. So we, you know, without collaboration and without sharing of information and ideas, 3D printing would still probably be relatively small and relegated to, you know, to major corporations. But because people were willing to share what they learned and basically put it out there on the web and, you know, take feedback and incorporate feedback and really sort of check their egos at the door and work more on how they could advance the technology as a whole collaboratively, we saw rapid advancements. And so what unfortunately we're seeing now in the 3D printing space is a bit of a retraction of that. There are a lot of new companies coming out of the gate, you know, with patent pending technologies that they think are going to set the world on fire. And maybe in some cases they will, but unfortunately it relegates those technologies to, you know, to one specific company or, you know, one specific set of companies that are licensing it. So, you know, our advice is just like that. What happened with RepRap was a really special thing and a really important thing, and we want to see that continue. We want to see the collaboration continue. And fortunately, a lot of the leading companies in the industry still feel that way. So definitely, just keep an open mind to collaboration.
Awesome.
Unfortunately, our time is running out. So I'd like to thank our guests Stephen Laval and Ben Malouf. I do want to remind people of our SIGGRAPH submission deadlines are February 13th for studio and emerging technologies and April 3rd for virtual and augmented and mixed reality submissions. So if you can get those in before those deadlines, do so.
Awesome. Thanks for joining us.
Great.
All right, thanks so much for having us.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of SIGGRAPH Spotlight. If you like the show, please subscribe or leave us a review on iTunes. For more information on the upcoming conference in Vancouver, visit s2018.siggraph.org.